Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Dennis Prager Show on this January 3rd, my brother's birthday. Yes, my only sibling. January 3rd. Do you have, if you have an older sibling, do you see him as I do? I still think of him as 18. Do you know that it's etched in my mind? You had that too, correct? I don't think, Pete, with your sister. How old is your sister in your mind? About
16.
How old? 16?
16.
It's the only person we have that with, I think. You see your parent get older. You don't have a vision of them, you know, much younger. I don't think. But you see movies and pictures. But the sibling, for whatever reason, and the question is she older than you? So even though she's younger than you, so it doesn't have anything. So she probably sees you as like 18. Okay. It is a very eerie sort of thing. And that's how I see my brother, who is now, you know, older than 18. So it's a very, life is funny. Life has a lot of these things. Yes, perception. Perception is so huge. What do they say in marketing? Perception is everything? There's a certain sort of phrase like that. No. Why are you guessing? He's guessing. Well, that perception is key. Right, anyway, Sean has been dismissed to the punishment room. Doesn't matter. Welcome to the show. I am not the only one to have been arguing. George Will argues this, and Daniel Henninger notes this as well, and others, that we are robbing from the next generation to pay for this one. I want to know what a Democrat would answer. What's your liberal brother-in-law, if you're liberal? What do you answer to that? Do you think that no one will have to pay off the debt? Okay, perception is reality. That's the way the phrase is. All right, that's very useful. Okay, perception is reality. Well, it's not reality, but it's the way we perceive reality. It doesn't matter. I don't want to get into that. What does one answer that charge that that's what you are doing with the debt issue? This is where the deep-seated irresponsibility of leftism applies in Europe and the United States and everywhere. Give the people, give, take, then there isn't any more to take, and you've given. Well, who was it? What city was it where the mayor said, and the police listening, I have a lot of police listeners, know how passionately supportive I am of police, but I'm also passionately supportive of truth, and the truth is, one mayor said, I don't remember which city, I'll get it though, said I have to pay for three police forces. The one that is working and the two that are retired. And the cities don't have that money. And it's not obviously not just police. I'm just giving an example of something we all, or nearly all of us, support strongly. So interesting. The left has never even expressed great support for the police as a general rule. All right. I'm putting it in a mild fashion, not being judgmental. But when it comes to money, then all of a sudden the left is keen on public employees and their pension plans, which of course are sending California into terrible debt as well. But you get their votes. You certainly get their votes. This is the America that we are inheriting and that we are giving our children to inherit. And you wonder, at what point will there be reckoning? Do you have an answer to that? What point, when will it be? I don't have an answer to this. At what point will voters for the Democratic Party say, we really do spend too much? Is there a point? If France is an example, there is no point. France is worse off than we are in terms of debt. And so their answer was, since the left has once again won the national election, and the answer was, take more from the wealthy. And that's what the answer in France was. And so there are French people like Gérard Depardieu, the most famous, I assume, isn't he the most famous French actor right now, who was simply left. These people have left, and that's what is going to happen in the United States. I don't think about just about people leaving the country, but they obviously we leave our states and so on. Do you know that Al Gore has sold his current TV network to Al Jazeera? And the Atlantic, and it's very important that I give you the source here. This is not coming from a conservative source. The Atlantic says that Glenn Beck had made an offer for the network, and now we don't know if for monetary reasons it was turned down or because Al Gore can look himself better in the mirror selling his network to Al Jazeera than to an American conservative. So, you know, it may turn out it was entirely a monetary fact. It's hard for me to believe that that was entirely the issue. I really do believe that the left has no problem with his selling his network to Al Jazeera, but would erupt if it was sold over to a conservative. Because for the left, Al Jazeera is not an enemy, but the right is. This is a very important moment in social history, in understanding the events and the politics of our time, that if you would ask anybody on the left, would you prefer if Al Gore sold his network to Al Jazeera or Glenn Beck? If they were honest, the vast majority of people on the left, and certainly the organized left, would say, better to sell it to Al Jazeera. So Al Jazeera will now have an... I don't know who will watch it. That's a separate issue. What has happened to the guy who had the worst person in the world? What was our guy's? Keith Olbermann? Is he just counting his money somewhere at a ranch somewhere? That was an amazing falling out that they had. I mean, he was like the star of the left. There is a lesson here, incidentally, for those of you who are young and ambitious, and that's fine to be young and ambitious. It's just perfectly fine. Of course, it depends what your ambition is. If it's to be a drug lord, it's not fine, but you get my point. Don't think that being a star alone guarantees your success. Over the course of time, you actually also have to work with people. As big a star as you may be, there is a point at which even your employers making money off of you will say goodbye. Does that happen to ball players? Where the guy's very hard to work with, but he's a star ball player. What happens in those cases? There are. I mean, you know, football, basketball, baseball. You don't hear it as much in hockey, but I'm sure it exists. As long as they're incredibly productive, they keep them on the team.
But as soon as they...
the slightest amount, then any excuse to get rid of them.
Yeah.
And apparently, I mean, I don't know him personally. Apparently, he was very difficult, very, very difficult to work with. And so even the star of that network was allowed to go. And it is something for you who are successful to know at work as well. If you treat your fellow employees, your colleagues awfully, even if you're a terrific lawyer or a terrific whatever, at a given point, you will be let go, which is very important. Do you know that there was a tradition in France to burn cars on New Year's? Yep. Do they identify who does this, or is the French the French media? Do you know that under Sarkozy, they didn't even report the number of cars that were torched? They were afraid that the youth who do this in France would compete to top last year's number of cars that were burned. This year, again, it's over 1,000. That's it, just torch cars. It's part of the reason that there was some debate in even France about, is it possible to assimilate a certain percentage of immigrants to that country. You're listening to The Dennis Prager Show. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to The Dennis Prager Show. You probably hear regularly that conservatives are anti-science. Whenever we differ with the left in any arena, we're always anti-something. You disagree on affirmative action, you're anti-black, and the list goes on. Whatever it is that, if you want school choice, you're anti-education, etc. The anti-science is one of them. If you differ with a left-wing perception of any issue in science, you're anti-science. So, too, Ben, have written a book published by a distinguished press, and I always look at who publishes books, Public Affairs, actually, which is not a conservative imprint. Dr. Alex Berezal, he is the editor of Real Clear Science, and he has a PhD in microbiology. And Hank Campbell is the founder and editor of Science 2.0, the world's largest independent science communication community. And I welcome you both to the Dennis Prager Show, Dr. Berezal and Hank Campbell.
Yeah, thanks for having us on the show.
Thanks, Dennis.
Thank you, and I hope I'll be able to distinguish the voices, so every so often say who's speaking when you answer a question, okay?
Hank is the much more manly one.
What do you say to that, Hank?
Whatever that means, yes.
that's very funny.
I hunt, so that's...
Well, and Hank is a former, Army officer, so, I understand. And Dr. Berezal, you live in Seattle, which,
Yeah, I drink lattes.
It brings out the feminine side in men.
Yeah. That's okay. I'm secure in my masculinity. It's okay.
Well,
we're gonna get emails about that. You can.
I hope you do. I hope you do. All right, gentlemen. I always ask authors, what's the thesis of your book in a nutshell?
Let me
tell everybody what the book is. Science Left Behind: Feel-Good Fallacies and the Rise of the Anti-Scientific Left. So this is very important, folks. They're making the charge that if anybody's anti-science, it happens to be the left. So go ahead. Science Left Behind is the book. It is up at DennisPrager.com. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sure. So basically the main thesis of our book is that the idea that whenever progressives claim that conservatives are anti-science, they're actually, they're throwing stones in a glass house. That sometimes conservatives are wrong in some scientific issues, notably evolution, for instance. However, progressives are routinely wrong on all sorts of far more important issues, such as energy, their anti-nuclear power, such as the future of food, they're anti-genetic modification. Such as public health, they are anti-water fluoridation in Portland, they're anti-vaccine. These actually have real impacts on people's lives, and yet the media continually labels conservatives as anti-science, and yet there are these huge issues on the left where they're equally, if not more, anti-science, and the media completely ignores it.
What is the story of the spoons in the house cafeteria?
The spoons in the house cafeteria were really, that's why the subtitle of the book is Feel Good Fallacies, because it was one of those sort of ridiculous intellectual placebos that Democrats gave to that hard environmental left part of the base to placate them a little bit. It did nothing at all to help anybody. You had spoons that melted in soup. You had corns that couldn't get anything, but they were supposedly compostable.
Well, how do you know that a spoon melting in soup is not a feature?
You can frame it that way, and framing is another aspect of the...
Edible spoons. I think there's something to it. You then drink the soup from the...
If you want to have the spoons in your belly, it's probably a great idea. But if you just want to have...
Wait, I don't understand, though. What kind of spoons did they have to be politically correct with the environmental left?
They were made from corn. They were corn-based, so they were supposed to be compostable. But you can imagine that in Washington, D.C., there's no place to do composting. So they had to ship these leftover spoons, the ones that didn't melt in the soup, off to a special pulper, and then they had to put them in emission-belching trucks and ship them into Virginia to where it would actually be composting. So if in return for these hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars they wasted, it saved the emissions of even one car. It's an environmental miracle.
I didn't know that. I don't think many Americans know that there was a while. Is that over with, by the way?
It is. When Republicans regained control of the House, Representative Brady, who was running that committee that oversees the congressional cafeteria, quietly asked his replacement, Representative Dan Lundgren of California, to cancel the program because they knew it was a bad idea, it wasn't working, and it was costing a lot of money. And he did it, and Nancy Pelosi immediately said that Dan Lundgren was going to give people cancer because they were using styrofoam cups again, and he was horrible for the environment, even though it was a Democratic committee that ran the numbers and said, this is losing us a lot of money. They just wanted a Republican to be the bad guy, and in politics, sometimes you play along.
The styrofoam cup will give you cancer statement that you just made reminds me, neither of you live in California, correct?
Oh, I do. Hank does.
Okay, all right, fine. So you know that if you go and fill your car, there is a sign on every gas pump about how much cancer you can receive from pumping gas, correct?
Right.
So is that anti-science or is that hysteria?
It's hysteria. You were, I don't know your age, but you might have been around in the 80s when these various laws were passed that you have to put a warning label on virtually everything. And the same lawyer behind that was the lawyer who was behind the recent proposition in California to put warning labels on genetically modified foods. It's the exact same guy. He's made a fortune selling under these cancer disclosure laws that this location, this product may contain chemicals that have been linked to cancer, all that kind of thing.
Has one human ceased pumping gas because of that sign?
No, and that's the sad part, is these really are just lawsuit bait. They're things that are designed to hijack businesses a little bit, and they settle for $2,000. They're not suing for millions and billions of dollars like if a company actually poisoned anyone. You don't have to show harm with those laws, and that's the real weakness, is if you don't have to show harm, all you have to do is show they didn't have the proper sign, and you can sue them. They settle for a few thousand dollars, lawyers get rich.
Yeah, I have another complaint that might even appeal to the more moderate people who care deeply about the environment and are left of center. What happens is no one then takes any sign seriously. We get inured to warnings.
Well, I think that's absolutely correct. And that was partially the reason behind the opposition to placing warning labels on genetically modified food. You know, about 75% of the food currently in the grocery store is already genetically modified. And the reason is because most food uses cornstarch or some type of soy product. And most corn and soy in this country is already genetically modified. A lot of sugar is genetically modified, too. So if you have to put a warning label on every single item in the grocery store that might contain genetically modified ingredients, it's sort of kind of, besides being scientifically inaccurate, it's kind of pointless to have a warning label on every piece of food.
Right. So again, and this is an area we're going to get into more depth with my two authors. The book is Science Left Behind, and the subtitle is very important here. Feel-Good Fallacies and the Rise of the Anti-Scientific Left. Why they make this charge when we return on The Dennis Prager Show. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Dennis Prager Show. The book is up at DennisPrager.com, Science Left Behind. The subtitle is Feel-Good Fallacies and the Rise of the Anti-Scientific Left. The authors are on with me. They are Dr. Alex Barrazeau, who has a PhD in microbiology, and the editor of Real Clear Science, Hank Campbell, founder and editor of Science 2.0 on the Internet, and a former U.S. Army officer. Gentlemen, thank you for being with me again. Science Left Behind is the book. Your book doesn't spend a lot of time on what's called climate change and originally global warming. Is there a reason?
Hank, why don't you take that?
Well, we don't. You know, we want to talk about, you know, that you have to keep a book, you know, kind of to a certain limit, right? So some of the things aren't going to be included. But it is interesting. If you talk about climate change, it's regarded as sort of a right-wing anti-science issue. But here's the fun part of that. If you use any term you want, if you want to use global warming, for example, and you ask people on the left if it's real and if it's caused by humans, 88% are going to say it's true. You're right, right? And then if you change it to climate change, something else that's a little more scientifically accurate than global warming. Global warming is not a good term. The exact same percentage are going to agree that it's true. But when you go to the right wing, when you use an unscientific term like global warming that really scientists don't use, you only see it in primarily media groups and scientists who are talking to the media, the acceptance is very low. But then when you switch to climate change, the people on the right, all of a sudden there's a 20 point spike in acceptance that, you know, the climate is important and we can impact the climate. Pollution is bad. And right-wing people, even those who deny global warming, conserve energy, they care as much about the environment as people on the left. And what that tells you is that basically right-wing people are thinking a lot more. They're thinking about what actual words mean in terms, and left-wing people are just accepting it. They know kind of what you're getting at. If you say climate change, you say global warming, whatever it is, they just go ahead and agree with you. You could say Smurfs are ruining the planet, and they'll agree that it's Smurfs, whereas a right-wing person is going to say Smurfs aren't real, they're a cartoon character. And I think that's the big difference, is there's a little more inherent skepticism among right-wing people than there is among the left. And we don't know why that is, it just is, but there's not a lot of that to cover in the book because you can only hammer on 15 issues and keep...
Well, the only reason I raise it is that's their smoking gun, so to speak, about how anti-science we who have any skepticism about man-made carbon emissions causing global warming leading to catastrophe. You have to accept all three premises. It's not even enough to believe the Earth is warming.
So, that's exactly right. And that's how people like Bjorn Lomborg, who I think is actually a great intellectual mind, he gets labeled as anti-science or anti-climate change. He accepts the fact that carbon dioxide is helping warm the planet and that we need to do something about it. He believes in all that, but he doesn't believe that we should destroy our economy in the process to solve the problem. And simply because of that, he's labeled as anti-science. And so you have to accept not only the science, but all of their policy prescriptions as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So what would you pick of your chapters to illustrate the feel-good fallacies and the anti-scientific left?
Well, I think the best one, and Hank probably has may have a different opinion on this, but I think the best one is the chapter we have on vaccines. And the idea that on the left there's this myth that natural things are good for you and unnatural things are bad for you. And that seems to be the root behind the anti-vaccine movement, which is very strong.
Isn't that identified with a lot of conservatives?
It's spread beyond the left wing. There's now some libertarians who are opposed to it. There are some conservatives who are opposed to it. But this movement started on the left. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Very infamously wrote this scathing piece about vaccines and how they cause autism in Rolling Stone and in Salon in 2005. And by that time, it was already been denounced by the scientific community. In fact, the scientific community has never accepted this idea that there was a link between vaccines and autism. Then, so if you look beyond Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Barack Obama on the campaign trail in 2008 said that vaccines might cause autism. Bill Maher, to this day, will spout anti-vaccine and anti-Western medicine propaganda. The Huffington Post was one of the biggest, loudest, most anti-vaccine, pro-alternative medicine, pro-woo progressive outlets out there. Yes, it has spread beyond the far left, but its home is on the far left.
How interesting. I never knew the Robert F. Kennedy thing. Boy, had a Republican congressman written that, I think it would have been much better known. You're listening to The Dennis Prager Show. A few more minutes with these excellent authors of Science Left Behind. It is up at DennisPrager.com. All right, everybody. The book is Science Left Behind, Feel-Good Fallacies and the Rise of the Anti-Scientific Left. I think one of the telling examples that the authors, Alex Berrizal and Hank Campbell, both involved in science, one of the telling examples is the issue of intelligence between men and women and how it works and the way in which the left reacts to any difference between men and women as sexist, rather than ask, is it scientifically true? And I think it's a very telling argument you give. You might want to mention it in the Lawrence Summers speech.
Yeah, so Lawrence Summers basically was
let me remind people, he was president of Harvard University when this came out, and he is a liberal, and he has served in the Clinton and in the Obama administrations. Go ahead.
Right, and he was basically giving a talk about why it was that there were differences in gender balance in academia. Why were there more men in, for instance, the sciences than in women? And he was giving various reasons, and he thought that discrimination actually played a very small role, and he thought maybe there were just a difference in preference and a difference in intelligence. And he didn't say that men were smarter than women. He said that if you look at the normal distribution, the bell curve, that there is a wider range of intelligences for men than there are for women. So women all tend to cluster around the average, whereas men will have a very wide spread. So you might have extremely brilliant people like Albert Einstein, but then extremely stupid people who knock off liquor stores. And he said that is the reason. Maybe that biology produces men that have extremely high intelligence, but also really dumb men as well. Now, that's a very controversial thing that he said. We don't know if it's true or not. There are some.
I don't even understand why it's controversial.
It's controversial simply because you're talking about gender and biology.
Well, that's the point. In other words, a mind not poisoned by college actually thinks, well, yeah, that makes sense. There are fewer women holding up liquor stores, and there are fewer women producing Einsteins. So men are at both extremes.
And that is a certain it's a definite possibility. And so what he said, in the case that we make in our book, we don't actually decide on the science because it's the jury's still out on the science, but it's biologically plausible what he said. And it's therefore, it shouldn't be controversial. You're absolutely right, Dennis. It shouldn't be controversial because it's biologically plausible. And yet he was chased out by the supposed progressive, the open-minded progressives at Harvard, basically chased him out of his job.
That's right. See, the first issue in science is to find truth wherever it is. And if you are stymied by charges of anti-environment, anti-woman, or anti-anything else, then how can you pursue truth? I assume that this is a basic aspect of your book.
And that's if we were going to create a thesis for the book, it would be that we're writing this book as a love story for the libertarian science heritage, right? So science is a politically neutral, an agnostic endeavor that's for the public good. It's explaining the world according to natural laws. And anybody who seeks to hijack that, you know, there may be a small subset on the right who does it. But on these issues, on the big issues, the big three, food, energy, medicine, the left is consistently hijacking the discourse so that they don't want you to be able to discuss uncomfortable truths that may be evident scientifically. They want to just squash it and pretend it doesn't exist, and that's not how science gets done.
Yeah, are there voices on the left that agree with you?
On some issues, there are voices who agree on, for example, the anti-vaccine movement. You just there was a CDC hearing before Congress 2 weeks ago, and all that I saw on my Twitter feed, which is going to be in science, it's going to be overwhelmingly left-wing people. That's just the way it is demographically. All they talked about was the fact that two Republicans had kind of mentioned the vaccine autism link, and none of them mentioned at all the numerous Democrats who've been saying it for years and who said it again in this CDC hearing before Congress. So that's the funny thing, is people are going to be kind of hijacked a little bit intellectually themselves, even if they think they're neutral. They want to see what they want to see. They have confirmation bias about the right. So it comes up a lot more.
Would the two of you consider the following to be an example of anti-science coming from the left? And that is the tax that is now being placed on medical device manufacturers, where in the tens of billions of dollars that will cause them to have far less research. Would that qualify as anti-science?
Well, I think that policy issues are much more complicated than just being pro-science or anti-science, right? Because science can kind of indicate which way a policy should go. But when you make policy, you also have to consider economic aspects, you have to consider legal aspects, you have to consider governance aspects. And so there's more to it than just being pro-science or anti-science. Now, if you were to ask me about, you know, what are my views on taxes, I think both Hank and I prefer smaller taxes. I think most people do. But, when setting policy, one thing that the left loves to do is that anytime you disagree with any policy position, you're automatically anti-science. And the problem with that is that there's simply more that goes into policymaking than just looking at what the science says.
The attack, what about the attack on big pharma? Where would you put that? As if pharmaceutical companies are gouging us.
Well, you know, pharmaceutical companies are we call them frenemies in our book. They are hard to love. They have done tremendous good in this world. They've literally saved billions of people's lives through vaccines, through medication. But they've also done it in ways that are incredibly dishonest. They seem to have no problem manipulating scientific journals. They seem to have, they will do experimental trials in third world countries.
Well, your answer proves that you guys are intellectually honest, which doubly reinforces the conviction that it should be read. Science Left Behind, Alex Berezow and Hank Campbell, Feel Good Fallacies and the Rise of the Anti-Scientific Left. Next time you hear the right called anti-science, you might want to pull out this book. Gentlemen, thank you for writing it, and thank you for coming on my show.
Thanks, Dennis.
You're very welcome. Yes, indeed. We will have a couple of comments on this. More on the news. You're listening to The Dennis Prager Show. Hi, everybody. You're listening to The Dennis Prager Show. How can a movement be pro-science if anything that discomforts it is given a pejorative label? That's what you think about when you read this book or when you talk to these authors. The book, again, is Science Left Behind, and I thank the authors. Just a final thought of my own here. And the Larry Summers thing was perfect. Here's the president of Harvard, a liberal, needless to say, you're not going to have a conservative president of Harvard. And he says, well, why do we at Harvard, he didn't say these words, but this is the point. We can get anybody we want. And even we can't get nearly enough women in chemistry and engineering, as an example. So is it sexism? Is it that women just don't gravitate for emotional or psychological reasons to those disciplines? Or could it be that there is something in the way the brain is formed, since we know the brain is different between men and women, that would propel more men to engineering and chemistry as examples than women? And by posing that, he was accused of sexism. So now you tell me which side is more anti-science? The side that only allows inquiry where there is no political agenda, or the other side? I want to know, where is research into discomforting ideas rejected by the right? Climate change, as it is now called, from global warming? On the contrary, the right is calling for more research. Because we have a skepticism about the politically ordained and guided agendas of the left. Could it be that the idea that we should go to away from fossil fuel may just be the left-wing agenda to begin with, and that perhaps global warming is the scientific fig leaf over their great desire to have us use less carbon-based fossil fuels? Is that possible? Is it possible that it accords with their agenda of transferring vast amounts of wealth from the first world to the third world? Is that just possible? Maybe it isn't science, but it is science used in order to further ideas. But because the left owns the means of delivery of ideas and news, with the exception only in the United States of talk radio, of Fox News, etc., then people don't ask the questions that I just posed. I'm Dennis Prager. We continue.